back on Canucks Central here in the Mobile Kintech Studio, getting ready for the Canucks and the Montreal Canadiens here tonight as the Canucks look to catch up to the Calgary Flames in the playoff standings and set up what should be a pretty good tilt tomorrow night against the Flames in Cowtown at the Saddle Dome. Joining us now to talk about it, senior columnist and analyst with Sportsnet, it is Eric Francis. Thanks for this, Eric. How are you?
I'm excellent. How are you guys?
We're doing pretty well. What's the scouting report on the Habs? You saw them the other night.
It's funny. I was talking to Mark Spector about when the Habs were in Edmonton, and he said it was one of the more entertaining games he's seen in a while, and couldn't believe how speedy the Habs were. I didn't see that. It's not the first time Spec and I disagreed on something. No, they're a young upstart team. They've got a lot of speed. I'll give them that. And I think they're going to. I think they're building in the right direction. But as for right now, I don't know. Their goaltending's good. They do a lot of things right, but I can't see them making the playoff picture. So that doesn't give you much of a scouting report.
Yeah.
And I know they're right on the cusp in the East. But I'm not a scout. I'm just a writer, damn it.
what I do know from watching a little bit of that game is Dustin Wolf's pretty good, right? And he's kind of an unbelievable story this year. I know it's quite the race for the Calder Trophy, so we'll see how that turns out. But Calgary, I think it's a pretty fair statement that Calgary's not in this playoff hunt without Dustin Wolf.
Oh, yeah. 100% agree. Like, the Calgary Flames are the lowest scoring team in the National Hockey League, and here they are in a playoff spot right now. Not all that comfortably, of course, but they're in the mix, and not many people saw it coming. And it's pretty crazy when you consider the fact that the season started with probably the biggest question mark the Calgary Flames had was its goaltending, not just Wolf, but Dan Vladar, like the duo, mm-hmm. and who would emerge and who would be better, and could Wolf live up to the hype, and that big question mark has turned into their biggest strength and the reason why they're here in a playoff race. It's quite unbelievable.
It really is, and he's been tremendous for them all season. And it's actually nice to see. I know people in Vancouver like to see the Flames fail and their players have struggles, but seeing Jonathan Huberdeau at least be a contributor again and look like a guy that can make a difference has been a big turnaround. But it's not like he has eye-popping numbers, but as far as his overall demeanor and impact on the team, has it been nice to see him at least somewhat earn that big contract this year?
Yeah, like, he's a long way off from being the $10.5 million player that he's paid to be, but big jump from last year. I think he's on pace for 28 goals right now. He's really changed his game. He decided in the offseason he had to sit down with the coach and said, look, hey, I need more minutes. I need to get more into the flow of the game. So they said, how about we get you to kill penalties? So this 115-point player is now one of their chief penalty killers. And they figure it gets him into the game more gets him more minutes. And it's turned him into a more of a defensive player. Like, he's worked really hard at being a 200-foot player. Before, he was just kind of a playmaker. And now he's a lot more well-rounded. And he said, look, if I can't get points and I can't help the team that way, I got to help this team some other way. So not only does he do it as a leader off the ice, he's a tremendous ambassador for the team and the players and with the media, but he's also, become a much more useful player other than a guy who's just struggling to try and get points.
It's whole year has kind of been by surprise, right? And I know you just wrote about it over at sportsnet.ca, looking back to the season opener for these two teams and the comeback that sort of set the tone, I guess, for Calgary's season and the Canucks for that matter. How big of a night is tomorrow for this group that nobody counted on being in this position at this stage of the season?
Yeah, it's huge. With, 19 games to go, these four-point games are absolutely massive when you're playing the team that's right ahead or below you. And isn't it interesting? I thought it was so interesting when I was digging into that first game, and I was there in Vancouver, and, it did set the tone. Like Blake Coleman said, it set the tone for the whole season. Like, Calgary Flames didn't know who they were or if they could compete with anybody. Everybody told them they wouldn't be able to compete. And there they were down 3-0 and 4-1 in your building in a pretty hostile environment, there was a good fight, there was a big hit where a player was unconscious. Like, there was a lot of juice in that building that night. Mm-hmm. And for the Flames to fight through all that and come back and win in overtime, that really gave them, that was just the kind of the first step in a number of steps towards believing that they could actually stay in this race. So, and I don't know if it's, you know, maybe it's a big, too big a deal to say that it damaged the Canucks, but it sure put them on a little off kilter to start the season, you know, a game that they probably felt they had in hand, and then things have kind of fallen apart from there. But anyway, it's been a good series, but Flames have won both games in the series so far. That game on New Year's Eve was also three fights in that. Mm-hmm. There was some good vitriol in that. So, yeah, this is huge, and they're going to play the game like it's huge. I wouldn't be surprised if we saw some fights and some real emotion again. It'd be awesome.
Yeah, I mean, I heard Huberdeau talk about it and how it's the biggest game of the season. The Flames certainly seem fired up about it, and it's really interesting because the Flames obviously are a team that you mentioned had no expectations of doing anything like this season, and people are excited by it, but at the same time, they're a team that obviously is struggling in the playoff race. They have a hard time scoring goals. Same exact situation the Canucks find themselves in, but yeah, the fan base is not excited at all. They're really upset about where things are going. So these two teams are almost in the exact same position, but it's being perceived wildly differently in each market.
Isn't that interesting, eh? Like, you know, I know your fan base, and you can hear the frustration with anybody who's a Canucks fan. Just like, I've heard some people say that they hate their team right now, and you don't hear that from fans very often. And I'm not sure that's the overall feeling, but frustration is certainly an easy word to use to describe your relationship, you know, the fans' relationship with the team. In Calgary, it's kind of the opposite. You know, it's kind of like they're playing with house money because nobody expected this. And I think there's an admiration, too, in this market for this team because they're doing it with goaltending. You know, so Wolf has quickly become like the most popular player in town and the most popular jersey to sell. But also, they're doing it with hard work. And, you know, and they're doing it with unity. Like, that room, there's no issues in that dressing room compared to the Vancouver room. So the juxtaposition is pretty interesting to me. Yet, all that said, guys, here we are, and they're basically neck and neck. So it doesn't matter how you get to this point. You're still right there for a playoff spot. And, you know, it's not like you wave a magic wand, but you guys go on a streak there in Vancouver, and you can still make the playoffs despite all the stuff that you guys have had to deal with this year. It's interesting.
Yeah, it is. It's super interesting. And, you know, both of the teams, they kind of profile similarly, at least from a stats standpoint. You mentioned Calgary as the lowest scoring team in the league, just 164 goals on the year. I honestly didn't know a team could score less than the Vancouver Canucks, Eric. That just that number feels pretty wild to me. But, you know, There isn't a lot of expected offense. You know, you got Kadri and Huberdeau leading the way. Like, where else do the Flames generate on this roster?
No, they don't. I mean, that's why they went out and got Frost and Farabee. And they haven't exactly done what, you know, they kind of hoped they would do. I mean, they're both a long-term play, so it's not just about fixing some holes this year. It was about moving forward with these guys. So, you know, Connor Zary was a guy who I think in a couple of years will be the leading scorer for this franchise or for this team, you know, and he hasn't had the season he kind of wanted. He was just starting to really play. He was probably their best forward the first half, but it didn't translate into points. And then he got a pretty bad knee injury that cost him 6 weeks, and he hasn't been the same since. So, you know, the guys that they were hoping would kind of continue, and Martin Pospisil was another guy who was a revelation last year. And who, you know, I think he's only got a couple goals this year. He's really kind of struggled offensively. So, yeah, it puts a lot of pressure on those two guys you mentioned, Huberdeau and Kadri. And then there's the other guys, Coleman and Backlund. They've been the best line Calgary's had for the last 2 or 3 years. And I think over the last 20 games, I think they have 2 goals between them. So, yeah, there's a lot of holes in this lineup, and it puts a lot of pressure on playing defensive hockey and goaltending.
As good as this season has been, has much changed as far as their overall plan and posture heading into next year and beyond? Because there was some thought that they may have to trade some guys this year and look to move some veterans, and it was going to really depend on how the season went. But do you think the success this year changes their plan or their trajectory at all?
It's a great question. Like, the one thing I would say that I would praise Craig Conroy for more than anything else is he's laid out a blueprint, and every move he's made since then has been following 100% in that blueprint. And that the blueprint is, you know, it's not just about this year. We're trying to make the playoffs this year, but also we're trying to build for the future at the same time. I call it a high build, a hybrid rebuild. And, you know, it complicates lots of different decisions along the way. But the overwhelming thing for this team has been, look, We're trying to make the playoffs, but that's not the be-all, end-all. The most important thing is we're building towards being a really respectable team. And the timeline kind of revolves around the Calgary Flames getting a new rink in 2027. And the goal is kind of all revolved around being a competitive team by that point in time. So, you know, with that in mind, there were no moves at the trade deadline day. Might have been tempting in some cities to go and fill a couple holes with rentals, but that doesn't fit in with the big blueprint, which is, no, we don't look at rentals. We look at guys who can grow with this team moving forward.
You know, I kind of wondered about Carson Soucy as a play for the Flames at the deadline. Obviously, Canucks ended up trading him to the New York Rangers, but, you know, he's an Alberta kid, and I just look at the Flames D, and it feels like so much is on the shoulders of Uyghur and Rasmus Anderson. It felt like they could have used an ad there. Obviously, the future's still in mind, but is that really maybe something they look at in the offseason?
They definitely wanted to add another defenseman at the deadline, but the prices on deadline day, as we all know, are insane. So if you're going for it, sure, you pay the price. But if you're not going for it, why do that? So, yeah, that'll be something they address in the summer. And in that vein, the number one thing they've got to figure out is what are they doing with Rasmus Anderson? So, you know, this summer, July 1st, they could sign him to start talking about an extension. Or, you know, if the numbers are just completely out of whack between the two sides in terms of what he's looking for and what they're willing to pay, I wouldn't be surprised if Rasmus Anderson was traded this summer. So that's their first decision they've got to make. And then if he is traded this summer, then, you know, there are so many more questions that follow. The one thing this organization has in its coffers is, you know, a bevy of young defensemen. You know, Hunter Bristavich, you guys remember from Vancouver. He's kind of progressing nicely. And Zane Parekh was a big shot draft pick. Anyway, they have a lot of good young defensemen, but they're still several years away. So if Anderson is on the move, boy, they're going to have to, you know, go and get something in return that can play right away.
Well, and as far as Anderson is concerned this year, he still leads the team in ice time, but he's also team-leading dash 22. But how much of that is the role he's playing, their lack of offense? And when you're playing those big minutes and you have the toughest assignments every single night, it puts you at a disadvantage. But is he having a down year by his standards, do you think?
It's funny you're at, like, the dash 22 is glaring, especially on this team. Like, there's nobody else that's kind of near that. Yet, I don't think anybody would argue this. If it's not his best season of his career, it's right up there. I don't think people think he's dropped off. His points have dropped off, and that probably explains a little bit of the dash 22. But he's fourth in the league in block shots. He's taken on more of a leadership role. He knows he's the number one guy. He was empowered in the offseason to say, look, I know that all of your friends are leaving. Elias Lindholm and Jacob Markstrom, all your Swedish friends are leaving. And maybe you want to get out the door too, but we think that you're like a key important player on this team. I would argue he's like top two or three most important players on this team. And I think that he's really taken that. It's really kind of elevated his give a crap meter. Not that he didn't care before, but he really takes a lot of pride in being a leader on this team, and he's kind of shown it. So, it's hard to say that he's not having a great season, even though the numbers might not suggest it.
So we saw the deadline. Andrei Kuzmenko got traded yet again. So he found another home here, and we'll see if he ends up sticking with the LA Kings. What did you think of the Andrei Kuzmenko experience in Calgary?
Well, you guys know that story well, right? It's I think that he's one of the more talented players I've seen in my time covering this league for 30 years. Like, I think his hands, his skating, like, I think the guy's, he reminds me a lot of Kent Nilsson back in the day. I remember Wayne Gretzky saying that Kent Nilsson was the most talented hockey player he'd ever seen in his life. Yet, nobody really knows who Kent Nilsson is. I mean, some people do, but they called him the Magic Man, and he was incredible. But he just didn't have the tool, like, didn't have the mind, right, to be consistent and do all the things it takes to be a great player. And I'd say the same about Kuzmenko. I mean, to score 39 goals in Vancouver just a couple years ago, and to fall this far, I mean, it got to the point where at the end in Calgary, I'm like, well, I just can't imagine he's in the NHL next year. I'd be shocked if he's not in the KHL next year. He's running out of teams here, and if he doesn't make his mark in LA, then I think it'll underscore that he's probably going to be in the KHL next year. It's just amazing. When he's on, and he's incredible, but I just don't think he's smart enough. I don't know. Do you guys think that's a correct read? He's just not smart enough?
Yeah, I think there's there was some off-ice, like fitness stuff, I think the Canucks wanted him to work on, at least when he was here. But ultimately, like, it just never seemed like he could get the grasp of what it takes to play off the puck consistently in the NHL.
Yeah. Defensively, he was a nightmare. And, you know, it's interesting in Vancouver when he was allowed to just run amok and get his 39 goals and not play defense. That was one thing under Boudreau, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And then
when
Tocca came in, he said, no, we're not going to have any of that on this team. and it changed everything. And then he comes to Calgary where, you know, they play a similar style here where defense first or else you can't make it on this team. So he had to go there. He lasted, a couple weeks with Torque. That was pretty funny.
Yeah.
And now he's in L.A. And, you know, I'll be watching closely to see if it works in L.A. I have my doubts.
At least he gets a couple of months in Hollywood before his NHL career might be coming to a close. Hey, Eric, we really appreciate the time. It's going to be a great one tomorrow night. Thanks for this today.
Yeah, boys, enjoy that game tomorrow. It's going to be fun, isn't it?
It is.
For sure.
There is Eric Francis, senior columnist at sportsnet.ca, covering the Calgary Flames. And, yes, the Kuzmenko experience has been wild. There's a lot to get into. But tomorrow night's game, like this two-game set for the Canucks. So if they win both of these games, they'll leave Calgary tomorrow night with a 3-point advantage on the Flames in the standings. Like that's how big getting back-to-back wins could be here for the Vancouver Canucks as far as the standings are concerned. And Utah played last night. They ended up getting just a point from the Maple Leafs after going down 3-0 early. So they're on 67 points. Blues are on 69 points, tied with the Canucks. That's how tight it is, but two wins here, especially because of the four-pointer tomorrow night in Calgary, changes a lot for Vancouver.
Yeah, it really does. And, I mean, we saw a 3-point lead also evaporate in like 3 days after the Four Nations when the Canucks came back. So we're at that stage where...
Well, losing two or three in a row crushes
it. It changes everything. But at the same time, nobody's pulling away. But now you're starting to see some of these teams win the games in hand. So you see Utah right there. Now, the Canucks have games in hand, but they're right there in the standings, right? Yeah. The Blues are right there in the standings. Anaheim's not that far away. And, you know, if you don't win these two games here tonight, does it change everything? Probably not too much. Like, it'll probably still be in the race, in the thick of it. But... at some point, and we've been saying this, and maybe it doesn't happen, but at some point, one team is going to get a little bit hot here.
Yeah.
And the Canucks have lost way too many points to not be that team, I feel.
Losing both would be would hurt, for sure. Wouldn't be like a nail in the coffin or anything for the Vancouver Canucks, but it would hurt. And getting four would be massive for this team, especially because tomorrow night's game is in Calgary. It's funny you mentioned Andrei Kuzmenko, and I think he's kind of got a bit of a weird part to play in the whole conversation around the Canucks over the last week, because it's now a little over a year ago since the Canucks traded Andrei Kuzmenko. A little over 2 years ago, or right around 2 years ago this time, they signed him to the extension that he is currently playing on, and... he was in a similar spot to Brock Besser that year where he's scoring a lot. Could he be a rental for another team? Do you want to sign him up? Is he Pettersson's long-term duo kind of a guy? But ultimately, like right away, Tocchet comes in and is like, I don't know if this guy's going to work for me.
Doesn't take long,
so
right?
It didn't take long after the extension that you could see and start to poke holes in how this extension's not going to work for the Vancouver Canucks after Boudreau was out the door. And so, you know, like that really started a moment where you see that this management group is not maybe capitalizing on value and prioritizing, just maybe not handling their assets where in the best way possible. And now you look over the last couple of years and it's accumulated to a certain extent where they're losing on players or having to trade away players at negative value when they're bringing them in at positive value or at a higher value.
I was thinking about this a lot yesterday. We spoke to Donnie about this a bit, and because I see a lot of the comparisons to, like, even we were talking about Calgary, the position they were in last year, and they sold, and you know, even bought the Boston Bruins, how they're similar to Vancouver this year, and they decided to sell. But those teams, well, at least the Boston Bruins, their three most important players, David Pastrnak, Charlie McAvoy, and Jeremy Swayman, all three of those guys are signed long-term.
Yeah.
So they're rebuilding with that team or retooling with that team. They can take a step back for a year or two and take that patient approach because they have their core guy signed up. The Canucks haven't been in a position outside of Quinn Hughes signing the six-year extension, but even that is problematic because if you don't sign your guys to as long as possible, as quick as possible, you run into these types of problems, especially when it comes to your franchise-altering players. There's no reason why, when looking back at it, Pettersson shouldn't have gotten an eight-year deal.
Yeah.
There's no reason, looking back at it, that Quinn shouldn't have gotten an eight-year deal. Because had you given both those guys a long-term contracts when you had the chance, we wouldn't be sitting here talking about Quinn Hughes being a free agent in 2 years. We'd be like, you know what? He has 4 years left. Take the patient approach. You have 2 years. You have a couple years to figure this out. Take a step back. But instead, we're sitting here and stressing about what's going to happen with Quinn.
Yeah.
Last year, we're sitting there stressing about what's going to happen with Pettersson. You have to win and convince him that you're a good team because he won't sign otherwise.
Yeah.
Does he want to be here long term? Had you signed him to another 3 or 4 years, you wouldn't be worried about that. Do you make different decisions as a franchise? Did you try to expedite things last year because you're trying to convince Pettersson? You're trying to convince Quinn? And that's where the Canucks find themselves consistently. Now, that's not this regime's fault.
Yeah.
They inherited the situation with those contracts, and they did what they had to do with it. But to me, a lot of problem exists there. Like, how common is this conversation we've had? You have to convince your stars.
Yeah.
You have to keep your stars happy. It's because they're not signed long-term. That's why we're having these conversations.
Yeah. It's the Quinn one right now represents, like, yeah, it's not just about – and I think that's where the, hey, ownership is forcing management to get this team into the playoffs. That's why they're not trading Besser. And I get those narratives. I understand those narratives in this market. But ultimately, I think it's what you've described through this whole trade deadline season, and that is the pitch is not just about making the playoffs this year. It's also about pitching a potential winning future in Vancouver for your captain, Quinn Hughes. And that is essentially guiding every decision the Canucks make.
Yeah, and, you know, somebody with, I think it was Mike in Nanaimo, was asking us, how do you grade management this season? Well, you can't give them a good grade because the team is worse from where they were last year. Now, you can talk about the circumstances.
It's almost the opposite of last year where they hit on everything last year, and now this year they're not.
You can give them credit for salvaging certain situations and all that, right? But obviously when the team takes a step back, when the team takes a step back, they have to take a hit, right? But that's been the type of year. And ultimately, this franchise or this regime is going to be defined by what happens with Quinn Hughes.
Yeah.
That's a franchise-altering decision that's coming down here, right? Are you going to be remembered as a regime that locked in Quinn Hughes and created the Quinn Hughes era of success, or the regime that lost Quinn Hughes?
Yeah.
We're talking about incredibly high stakes here.
Yeah. And, you know, like Calgary... Even in Calgary, they held on as long as they possibly could before they were, like, bonked over the head with a steel pipe that said, you have to rebuild now. But, like, the opening was there. When Matthew Tkachuk asked for the trade, it's like, do you just take this opportunity to rejig the whole thing?
Yeah.
Because Tkachuk asked for the trade. Johnny Gaudreau, rest his soul, he left in free agency, all that happening in a short span of time. It's like, do you just redo the whole thing now? Trade Tanev, trade all these guys, trade Markstrom, trade it now and, like, really expedite the rebuild. They waited, they did the Kadri thing, they signed Huberto to the big contract, and obviously it almost compounded some of their issues where they're not going to be able to get out of that Huberto contract for a very, very long time. It's Dan Riccio, Satyar Shah coming up. Overrated, underrated, there's a lot more Canucks talk coming up in overrated, underrated, as the Zamboners go back out for a rip here at Rogers Arena. Stan Riccio, Satyar Shah.
You know, people have kids, right? They have families.
Sportsnet 650.
The most opinionated Canucks show out there. Canucks Talk with Jamie Dodd and Thomas Drance. Be sure to subscribe on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.